CBS Friday. TV's hottest show is Fire Country.
I'm not a hero. I'm in orange for a reason.
They're taking 12 months off your sentence. You're free.
Lady.
With a special epic season finale.
Now that I'm out, I need something to get me up in the morning.
You are a firefighter.
Used to be.
That will be unforgettable.
In the name of your life's happiness, go get your girl.
She's getting married tomorrow.
Says, when do you let anything get in the way of what you want?
The Fire Country season finale. Friday, 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me. This is the Michigan-Maryland preview episode. We'll talk about some of the keys to Michigan's penultimate regular season game, not just in winning this game, but also in setting themselves up for success in the coming week. I hear there's a big game in about 9 days, so we'll talk about that. But before we get there, we do have to talk about the breaking news, although this might be, Steve, the last time we talk about Sinegate for a little while, because it sounds like the court case that was scheduled for Friday is now off. Just literally 5-10 minutes before we hit record on this, Michigan released a statement that said, this morning, the university, Coach Harbaugh, and the Big Ten resolved their pending litigation. The conference agreed to close its investigation, and the university and Coach Harbaugh agreed to accept the 3-game suspension. Coach Harbaugh, with the university's support, decided to accept this sanction to return focus to our student athletes and their performance on the field. The conference has confirmed that it is not aware of any information suggesting Coach Harbaugh's involvement in the allegations. The university continues to cooperate fully with the NCAA's investigation. And the Big Ten also released a statement. It's pretty similar. I guess point being, at one point, it did seem like Michigan had, at least through message board, insiders, reporters, had kind of seemed to imply that it was ready to fight and make this very messy with the Big Ten. That evidently is no longer the case. Now, I think there's a couple ways to look at this. And Steve, I do want to get your thoughts on this too. I think case one is, I assume Michigan came to the conclusion that it was not going to get the restraining order that it had hoped to get. Obviously, it hoped to get it before the Penn State game, but I'm guessing they don't agree to all this if they still think that there's high chance that they win. I know Joe Simon, who's a sponsor of WTKA, you know, he kind of pointed out Michigan's case would have to be more than Michigan didn't get due process. And he did a nice job outlining it over at the Michigan.com, Michigan@247sports.com, where it's not just a lack of due process, because that's not necessarily something that's immediately going to be nullified in court, the Big Ten's decision. I think, you know, there needs to be more to show just how bad Michigan was wronged. So there might be that legal side of things, right? They might feel like they have the moral high ground, the moral leverage, but maybe it's just not, they don't check enough of the boxes legally. I think the other part that is at least crossing my mind as I first read these statements is, you know, we talked about in the past, the Big Ten was supposed to have Michigan's back like 5 steps ago, not necessarily to the detriment of the 13 other schools in the league, but a conference's job is to kind of protect its members, not protect in terms of shielding, but kind of help its members when things like this happen. How do you make sure that there isn't a month-long sensationalized scandal that gets covered by everyone under the sun? I've kind of spoken in the past, the Big Ten really probably should have tried to show that it was in Michigan's corner earlier. So I guess the other question when I see this statement is, resolved their pending litigation. Is that simply Michigan just saying, never mind? Or is the Big Ten offering something behind closed doors in return? I'm not suggesting anything. I'm not trying to fuel a conspiracy theory or anything, but is there some sort of, okay, in exchange for you not trying to sue us and making this messy and making both Michigan and the Big Ten look bad? Because that is one thing I think everyone agrees on. If this goes to court, no one wins. There's no scenario where Michigan comes out looking so great or the Big Ten comes out looking so great. You know, no one wins when stuff like this gets aired out in the courts. I would argue everyone loses to some degree, except the lawyers, right? We get their billable hours. So I guess that's my other thought, is like, what was maybe solved behind closed doors? I mean, one thing that seemed like it was important to the statement The conference has confirmed that it is not aware of any information suggesting Coach Harbaugh's involvement in the allegations. That doesn't seem like it was accidentally put in there. So maybe there is some discussion being had about how will the Big Ten collaborate with the NCAA. I mean, the NCAA is running the investigation, but is there some scenario where the Big Ten can add context, or perhaps add the context of other teams are stealing signs, just doing different strategies? Is there some other way that the conference can show its support for Michigan? Because, I mean, we've all been hearing from people inside Michigan's program a week ago, this did not seem imaginable. I mean, the pure rage and frustration and overall contempt for the Big Ten, it kind of seemed a little irreparable. So what happened between now and then? I don't think it's just Michigan didn't have enough for a TRO. It could be. I feel like there was something else has come up that Michigan feels like, as long as this is the end of the punishment in the Big Ten side of things, it can be content with that and just handle whatever the NCAA brings. So I'm sure people who don't like Michigan are looking at this as, Michigan backed down from their big threats about a lawsuit. I'm sure Michigan fans are kind of looking at it like, oh, the Big Ten probably, you know, is going to help Michigan in the future. Probably both or neither, something in the middle. What are your first thoughts about this statement?
From a pursuit of the truth standpoint, it's probably a worst case scenario for us as far as understanding the what's and the whys of right. I think we discussed, like, on the list of possible outcomes, this felt like it was very low on the probability scale that they wouldn't even make it to court tomorrow, right? But now feels like we're going to be hard pressed to understand the full body maybe of information that led to this decision, this mutual decision, right? I mean, the Big Ten agreed to conclude their investigation. That's per the university's statement, per Michigan's statement, right? We've said all along that we were waiting to see if more evidence would pop up, you know, based on what had been reported and what had, you know, all that there was, there was nothing to suggest that this wasn't more than a wacko rogue dude kind of like trying to build his own name. There was nothing connecting anybody higher up at Michigan. And now we know that the Big Ten's done concluding, they're going to conclude their investigation, and that Jim Harbaugh has still not been linked in any way, shape, or form to it, which the NCAA had already come out on the NCAA's end before the Big Ten, or before the original restraining order had been delayed, or the hearing had been delayed in from last week, right, heading into the Penn State game. So still sort of a limbo as far as, like, is this is this good news or bad news? It's bad news in the idea that Jim Harbaugh won't be on the sidelines next weekend against Michigan State. I don't know how, or against Ohio State. I don't know how you could.
That does not help Michigan,
right? You cannot put, there's no way you can spin that into a positive, I would think. So it just kind of still, we're still sort of left in a state of wondering, was there more information uncovered? I guess maybe we will find, because you got to think the NCAA would. It's not like the Big Ten has found something that the NCAA hasn't, and that the NCAA is never going to find out because the Big Ten concluded there. There's almost no way that's a feasible situation here. So maybe we will find out, or maybe this just was, like you said, the Big Ten maybe not wanting Michigan to take this any further, and Michigan just saying, let's just call it good then, you know. But I don't know where you're at.
I have a hard time thinking. I don't mean to interrupt, but I have a hard time.
No, I wanted to hear what you wanted to say about it. Yeah.
That Michigan would totally give up the suit effort if it didn't have something to feel good about. Like, you know, I know a lot of people think, well, maybe they wouldn't win, but Michigan's mindset was very much go down swinging, make this as painful and awful for everyone as possible. That was their mindset, right? That's why there was chatter from Sports Illustrated about Michigan at least considered its possibilities of leaving the Big Ten. I mean, there was all this. It wasn't just, we disagree and we're going to fight. It was like, They were seeing red, right? They were ready to rumble. So for them to back down, that says to me, Michigan got something. Either A, it was going to look so bad that they were like, actually, never mind. Or B, they had some sort of conversation with the Big Ten that was productive enough that they said, honestly, yeah, big picture, we'll take this option over taking it to court and making it messy.
Yeah, that's about the only way. And given the consistent, the other thing I keep that I'll lean on just as because what this literally broke, what, 5 minutes, 10 minutes before we recorded it. Not like we've had a lot of time to sit and think about it. But the consistency, that actual like stuff has been leaked. I just feel like there'd be more. Maybe we would, if it was the former of the first two of the two things, the two options or the two scenarios you mentioned, I just feel like we might, maybe we would know a little bit more at this point as to why this played out the way that it did. Especially when you consider that Michigan was not even, Michigan found out about the original suspension. We may have known before Michigan and Harbaugh even knew, right? Remember that, like they...
Oh, yeah.
Right? It we did know. Like
we did, yeah.
So you wonder, you know, why, if the Big Ten, it feels like there was clearly somebody within the Big Ten office that was leaking information. You kind of feel like, and... that those leaks, the consistent leaks were not I don't want to say there's like a pro Michigan anti, but like it was always the news that was negative for Michigan that was being leaked out. You'd almost think that would have happened again, right? I don't know. That's kind of another thought that came to mind. So maybe it is the latter. Maybe he had, you know, but like you said, like we've said, I still hard for me to wrap my head around Harbaugh just agreeing to not coach Michigan against Ohio State. That just doesn't really seem to fly as far as an outcome that everybody at Michigan is satisfactory with, right? Like you said, especially given how aggressive it felt like Michigan appeared to look and appeared to what we'd been told, you know, heading into going into the filing the restraining order and all that stuff. It just odd, very interesting situation.
One other thought that did cross my mind last week, but I didn't really know or think that much of it. And I figured Michigan had checked all the boxes that it needed to check on this. If it files some sort of lawsuit or TRO request or any, whatever legal term, if they go after the Big Ten in court, could that be interpreted as not cooperating with the NCAA investigation? Because you are technically mandating that evidence be shared before it's complete. Like this is more me thinking out loud here, not necessarily making a case. I'm just wondering, like, is there a part of Michigan? Because I think Ward Manuel released a briefer statement, but that said, we have received enormous encouragement from our community, and I will continue to support Jim and our program while cooperating fully with the NCAA process. Like, it's more thinking out loud, but is there some value for Michigan if they want to show, because the NCAA has made it very clear, see the last investigation into Michigan. If the NCAA doesn't think you're cooperating with them, they can hit you with a worse punishment. So that's one thought that came up to me when I was reading Ward Manuel's statement was, okay, maybe Michigan realizes like, cooperating with the NCAA is probably a bigger assignment than making the Big Ten look bad. I don't know. It's an interesting one because I don't think it just continues kind of the mystery of things. We're starting to learn a little bit of pieces here and there. Connor Stallions, according to multiple publications who did FOIA requests, never submitted for an expense report. So I don't think he would be that dumb anyways, but also we've seen, I mean, he bought these tickets in his own name. If he felt like Michigan Athletics was to fund this, he would have filed one at some point. So that's one thing. And then I think the other thing that was interesting this week, John Harbaugh, now he's just speaking with a reporter. It's not like he has every fact of evidence in front of him, but he says that they've gone through Jim Harbaugh's phone. They've gone through his computer, found nothing. That also seems to be in Michigan's favor. And I'm not saying that they won't be punished because Jim Harbaugh hasn't been connected or implicated, because ultimately as we've discussed on here, it does fall on him. But it, I do think the punishment would be significantly less if Michigan had a staffer who took things too far and no one else really knew about it or was suspicious of it, versus some grand conspiracy where they were all in on this and funneling him money and things like that. I do feel like that's a very different punishment than it being like this giant network of staffers that were in on it. Steve, before we turn to Michigan, Maryland, any additional thoughts on the latest news and statements basically saying this will not go to court as initially expected?
Not really. Now we're just kind of in wait and see mode, right? Maybe we may have to record another podcast about this at some point, depending on what. I didn't mean to sound so
well, but you're right though. I mean,
it's exhausting. It's become exhausting.
Sometimes there's news that immediately follows news.
Right, right. It's just like I said, we got on. It's a good. I'm glad that we, you know, we were a little behind in recording today, like not long, like 20 minutes, but that 20 minutes actually allowed this news broke within that 20 minutes. So, you know, we're in a better position. It's just, like I said, my thing is I'm just curious to see if there's more information that comes out. So in a way, really the only thing that's changed is Jim's suspension has been upheld. I'm still in the same spot where it's like, okay, well, now, so we know that, but like, why, like what, will we find out what led to this outcome that, yeah, like you said, we as of even 48 hours probably were not expecting. Alejandro was ready to be at the courthouse tomorrow, correct?
Yeah, poor Jerome, man. He changed his
flight.
We had a whole afternoon in D.C. prepped, and then he changed his flights to go in the evening, so now it'll just be me out there having fun.
Hey, that'll be good. That'll be good time. But anyway, so no, otherwise, no, ready to talk some football, honestly. So
let's do that. All right, we're going to hit a quick break. On the other side, we'll talk about Michigan versus Maryland as the Wolverines go for another road win and their 1,000th win in program history. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
So, Steve, I figure for this, we just knock out a couple things we want to see from Michigan's offense, a couple things we want to see from Michigan's defense, both not just in beating Maryland, who is 6-4 on the season, has played pretty well at home so far. I mean, they, you know, obviously they lost four straight games at one point, including blowout losses to Penn State and Ohio State. But at the same time, decent team, decent amount of NFL talent on that team, but also keeping an eye on the Ohio State game. Right, this is always kind of the weirdest game of the regular season for both Michigan and Ohio State, where they're like trying to avoid injuries, trying to keep the playbook vanilla, trying to, you know, get the backups in, keep guys fresh, but also trying to like build momentum, build confidence for obviously the game. Steve, what do you want to see the most from this offense? Last week, kind of a weird week, right? 32 straight runs, only 8 pass attempts the whole game, 60 passing yards overall. What do you want to see from Michigan's offense this week?
Given the potential stakes next weekend, I think if you're Michigan, I think you want to win as easily as possible without really having to open up the playbook at all, right? I mean, I guess that's got to be what you're thinking, which they were, I mean, if we're being honest, they were kind of able to do last week. To beat a top 10 team on the road without your head coach and only throwing for 60 yards and running the ball or 32 straight times, don't know if you could ask for a much better scenario given the circumstances. So I think if you're Michigan, I think you kind of want to sort of continue that. I I don't know about you. I expect Michigan to pound the ball again on Saturday, and I think they'll succeed again with it. So that's pretty much where I'm at. I think you want to see, I don't have Maryland's roster off the top of my head. I do think there were some, and it's been talked about, there were some circumstances last Saturday. Carson Barnhart kind of struggled. I don't expect to see that struggle again, but if there's a player you kind of want to keep an eye on, I think you do want to see what kind of rebound performance he has, because we know Ohio State does have, obviously has some talent at the edge position. So you want to make sure things are good there as well. So, but for me, I think it's a very similar game plan to last week.
I think that's fair. I think, you know, Maryland, they do have some edge rushers, right? They're third in the Big Ten in sacks with 28. They've got a few guys because the DMV is just so talent rich with football nowadays. It does seem like every year they've got a couple 4 or 5 star guys on the edge. So they've got some guys who can get sacks. They've got, you know, a good rotation. I don't think they have anyone like Chop Robinson coming out of the cannon like that, or I think Penn State had another 5 star guy on their defensive edge rotation. So yeah, it won't be quite as talent rich, but I do think this is a good game to see how that pass protection looks, because Ohio State, I mean, they're not quite Penn State in terms of generating sacks, but they do have talented football players who can get to the quarterback and will get paid a lot of money to get to the quarterback in the next few years. So it's, you know, I think Carson Barnhart started enough games where I'm not thinking, oh, can he handle it? Of course he can handle it. I do think you do want to see some confidence, some chemistry, some comfort in pass protection when they do throw the ball this week. I'm kind of with you. The only thing about I think Maryland is, at least from what I've been able to see, is a little bit worse in pass defense. Like, that might be the easiest path to a comfortable victory or putting up points. So I don't know if they're going to go ground and pound.
Sure. Early. Hey, how about this? Let me rephrase. I guess let me rephrase, because you brought up a good point. It depends. I guess when you use the phrase open up the playbook, I guess people, and I just fell into this trap, maybe you kind of just automatically assume that means opening up the playbook means you're throwing the football, right? For Michigan, opening up the playbook might mean showing more like of your run scheme, right? I mean, so they could theoretically run a very conservative game plan while both passing and running the football.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. I that's a little bit of a misnomer I want to throw in there. Also, you mentioned Maryland having a lot of talent at the edge. Chop Robinson went to Penn State from Maryland. He was on Maryland's roster. So yeah, there's always talent in that area. Michigan recruits the heck out of the DMV at the edge area. So anyway.
Yeah. And guys like Quishon Fuller, Kellen Wyatt, Donnell Brown, those are kind of the three that probably have the most numbers right now. But yeah, it's a nice rotation. There's athletic talent, there's size, there's strength, athleticism. It's a good group. And then in the secondary, they do lead the Big Ten with 13 interceptions. I think Michigan's second with 12. They've got some ball hawks, guys at cornerback and safety. That's a little bit different than some of the other teams Michigan's been heavily favored against. Feels like a lot of teams have like two good cornerbacks and then the rest of the defense kind of struggles in coverage. I think Maryland's a little better than that, but at the same time, they've given up big plays. Penn State, I mean, gosh, the way that Penn State played against Maryland, you would think that they were clicking on all cylinders. They had 4 touchdowns, what, 200 some yards. I mean, it's highly efficient passing attack. And, you know, Ohio State, Illinois, Northwestern, and Penn State, 4 straight games, Maryland gave up 10 passing touchdowns, had 1 interception, and gave up more than 11 yards per pass attempt. So I don't know if there was an injury there. I don't know exactly what happened between the beginning of the season versus, you know, the previous few weeks. They did well against Nebraska, but Nebraska, we've seen their passing attack this season. That's not a, it's not a strength of theirs. So I think a balanced offense is fine. You know, I think the big thing will just be, I think Blake Corum on a carry count. I think Donovan Edwards on a hard carry count, right? Where maybe you limit how much he's doing in between the tackles, but maybe this is a game where you do kind of put more plays of him catching passes on film. Maybe you do try to get him even more confident, having bumping stuff outside. I mean, he talked with reporters this week. It really did seem like he just, had a weight off his shoulders to have a couple of those big runs. I mean, he's never been an unconfident guy. He's, and I'll give him a lot of credit, Donovan Edwards. When he was struggling this season, he wasn't hiding from the media. Whenever Michigan asked if he wanted to speak, he said, absolutely. So I give him credit that, you know, I think sometimes players, if they're slumping or if they're struggling, they try to avoid those interviews because it's always the player's call at the end of the day. But he didn't, so I give him credit. But it did seem like he had perked up, and he was, I mean, he's always smiling, but he was smiling a little bit more. So I think there could be some value to, you want him to be fresh, but his carry count is also low enough this season that, you know, maybe you don't have him run between the guards or run between the tackles, but maybe you can give him some plays. But this does feel like a game where if Khalil Mullings has 10, 15 carries, that's probably a mission accomplished for Michigan. You know, let him ice this game out. It doesn't have to be one of the guys that you definitely will be counting on against Ohio State. Yeah, as far as the rest of the offense, I think this could be a big game for the tight ends. Linebackers for Maryland, not great in coverage. They definitely give up some plays. And again, we've talked about it. Michigan, I think they've done a nice job of this, but the more stuff you put on film, the more on their heels future defenses will be. Michigan doing a great job getting the ball to tight ends, doing a great job getting the ball to running backs in the pass game. You know, Samaj Morgan quietly continuing to make some big plays. I mean, felt like everything, there were felt like there weren't really any big plays against Penn State in the passing game. But at the same time, yeah, just continuing to establish that rhythm, establish that confidence. And then this might be a game where you don't worry about the margin of victory. Maybe you do take your starters out a little bit sooner. All right, real quick, a couple over-unders from our good friend Neil. He missed us last week, but I like to think we would have gotten them all right. So far this season, I'm 24-17. You are 17-24. Number one, J.J. McCarthy has 19.5 passing attempts. I think I'm going to take the over. I think the one reason they would pull him or limit it is if, and this is a little bit of what they did against Penn State, is if Michigan's getting beat bad in pass protection, you just start running the ball. Like if it looks like, you know, JJ's going to take 3, 4, 5 sacks, because he's a tough guy. I mean, he can take hits. He's a hockey player. He lowers his shoulder when he runs the ball sometimes. At the same time, this is probably a game where he's not keeping on the read plays. And this is probably a game where if they give up a few pressures in a row, they might shut it down. I think I'm going to take the under. First instinct was over, because it feels like this is a matchup-wise, this is a good game for them to have him throw the ball, maybe have him put up some good numbers so he's going into next week's feeling good. But I think I'm going to take the under. How about you, Steve?
You're taking the under on that one?
19.5 pass attempts? I think so.
I'll take the over. That's a tough one, though. That's a good number. Like I said, I fell into the trap of assuming open up the playbook means you run the ball more and don't pass it, but like I said, maybe it turns out to be the opposite, given I think Michigan feels like they can run the ball on Ohio State. So, yeah, I'll take the over. But that one, yeah, that could be – you might get me on that one.
Yeah, I feel like we're playing mind games with ourselves a little bit here.
A little bit, yeah. Well, I've already lost. I don't even think I can win. So
I would have to do very poorly the next few weeks. All right, next one, 99.5 rushing yards for Blake Corum. I'm going to take the under on that one. He's only gone over that twice all season. Once was last week, and then the other one, it was 101 yards against Bowling Green. So I feel like Michigan, one benefit to Corum kind of being in the situation that he's in and having the maturity that he has is I don't think Michigan has to feel obligated to, like, help him pad his stats. I mean, he got to pad his stats last year. This year, he just wants a championship, and I think he wants to play in that Ohio State game. He wants to play in that Big Ten championship game. He wants to play in the college football playoff. So I would be stunned if he has more than 10 carries in this game. If he did have more than 10 carries, that probably means that Michigan was unable to pull away like it expected to. So I'm taking the under on that one. And then real quick, Donovan Edwards, 69.5 yards from scrimmage. I mean, who could forget that 2021 game from a couple years ago where he had, what, 200 receiving yards against Maryland alone? I'm going to take the over. I feel like Michigan, especially if they're limiting Corum's carry count, I feel like this might be a game that Michigan circles and says, let's let Donovan Edwards get into a true groove, true rhythm, because he can really help against Ohio State. I'm not really going out on a limb on that one. He was arguably the offensive hero against Ohio State last season. So I'm going to take the over. I think they actually do try to feed him a little bit. Your thoughts on the Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards over-unders?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on both of those. I think, I mean, the other factor, especially with Corum, like if he doesn't break a long run, I wonder how much Corum's going to play on Saturday for the simple fact that he's never been 100% against Ohio State. I got to think, not disrespect to Maryland or that they're looking ahead, but man, I got to assume he wants to be no questions about his health heading into Saturday. So I suspect we may see, and again, Donovan Edwards looked good on Saturday against Penn State. You got to think again, we'll find out in the next few weeks if he really is a momentum player. So I think that this Saturday is a perfect opportunity for Michigan to maybe try to ride that momentum while you're able to keep Corum healthy heading into next week. So I'm going to go with you on both of those.
All right, let's switch over to the defensive side of things. Michigan's defense, I would argue, did everything it needed to do against Penn State on the road. They always say pack your defense for road games. I mean, they'll have to do it again this week, but I do think even more than the offense, I think Michigan's defense really looks like it's ready to contend for and maybe even win a national championship later this fall and winter. So they kind of checked every box. I don't think defense is a position where you need to keep guys on snap counts. I think the biggest key, though, is stopping that Maryland passing attack. Talia Tagovailoa, what stands out to me about him, one, great arm, NFL caliber arm. And two, I think he can and will throw anywhere on the field. Like, I look at his, like, spray chart. I know that's, like, the hitting term, but kind of where to the sidelines, deep, intermediate, behind the line of scrimmage. I mean, he throws to all of them, and he completes passes to all of them. They've got a really balanced pass-catching core, Maryland does. You know, they've got three wide receivers who really jump out to me. They've got Roman Henby, who's the running back. He's one of the top running backs in the country at catching passes. Corey Dykes, their tight end. He's, what, third nationally in tight end receptions so far this season. So I think the big key for Michigan is, in this matchup, I think the biggest way Maryland can keep this a close game, in my opinion, other than like fluky turnover weirdness, bad injury luck, that kind of stuff, I think the biggest other way is that they can kind of catch Michigan's defense napping a little bit, score a few easy touchdowns. I feel like those are going to be through the pass game. So I think the biggest key is cover the whole field. You know, this is going to be a game where Maryland will probably try to test Michigan's linebackers in coverage, test Makari Page, Rod Moore in coverage, you know, test guy, you know, the cornerbacks, I think, have done a nice job all season, but you know, how do they handle those short slants? How do they handle multiple deep passes in a row? Right? Because there is some level of conditioning and mental discipline when a team is trying to throw it deep multiple times in a drive. So yeah, I think that's the biggest key. Maryland's run game does not impress me very much. You know, I think this is very much about making sure Maryland's passing attack doesn't go off and catch you napping and throw for 300 yards and keep this game close. Your thoughts?
I mean, you got to say that this is the perfect sort of like pretest for Michigan heading into the game against Ohio State, right? Because those two teams have pretty much far and away the best passing offenses that Michigan has on their schedule this season. So I know if you're Michigan, I think you're looking forward to this opportunity, because I think if there was a game within the conference that was going to prime you for Ohio State and their ability to throw the football, it's got to be taking on Maryland. I think so. Yeah, that's Maryland's strength. So Michigan is going to be tested there. It's not a situation where we expect Maryland to run the football that successfully, and Michigan has been very, very good at stopping the run. So, so that being said, very good opportunity for Michigan there for their edges to collapse the pocket. And I also think, the linebackers in coverage, but also their reactive abilities, because Tagovailoa, he'll run. Like, he can make plays on his feet,
yeah,
too.
He's he's got over 200 yards. If you take away sacks, he's got over 200 rushing yards this season on about 5 yards a pop.
Yep. So not, I mean, yeah, not a run first guy, obviously, but he can make plays with his feet if the opportunity's there. So yeah, I think in a lot of ways, this is a really good sort of final test before Michigan meets up against Ohio State, more so on the defensive end than the offensive end. I really think this is perfect for Michigan in that regard. So, it'll be the other guys because Will Johnson's played really well. Josh Wallace looks like a guy. So, yeah, it comes down the third and fourth corners and the safeties and the linebackers for sure. So yeah, no, if you're Michigan, I think you're chomping at the bit to get out there on Saturday and sort of pass this final test before Ohio State comes to town.
So the one other key I have for the defense, and this is arguably more about next week than this week, although it would help this week because Tagovailoa, he is 40th nationally in passer rating when the pocket is clean. He is 89th nationally in passer rating when under pressure. He doesn't take a lot of sacks because, as you mentioned, he's mobile and athletic. In fact, Michigan had Alex Orji as the scout team quarterback this week to kind of simulate what he can do and his tendencies. But at the same time, that kind of drop off in pressure, that's a preview to next week. We'll talk about the exact stats after Ohio State plays another game, but Kyle McCord, he is top 10 nationally in passer rating when the pocket is clean. He is outside the top 100 nationally when under pressure. I don't think that there is a steeper drop off in the country among any quarterback between clean pocket versus under pressure than Kyle McCord. Now, Talia, he's kind of similarly set up. And I think that is maybe one thing. If there's one last, you know, think about like Thanos, like what the last gem is. I think it is the pass rush for Michigan's defense. I think that is the one area that they have not been week in, week out, not just getting better, but already dominant. You know, there's been some great moments, right? You'll see a play and be like, yeah, they've got NFL guys at the edge position. They've got defensive tackles who can pressure like anybody in the country. They've got Michael Barrett and Mike Sainristil still who don't go after, they don't blitz a ton, but when they do, they rarely miss. So there's definitely been moments. I do think you want to see a little bit more consistency from the pass rush, not necessarily in sacks, but I do think that really helps. That goes a long way. Sacks are going to always be better than pressures. And even within the definition of pressure, there's made the quarterback throw the ball a little faster. And then there's made the quarterback throw the ball away, scramble for his life and completely ruined any shot of gaining yards on the play. I think there's different levels of pressure too. So that's something I'll be watching. And speaking of that, with our over-unders, one of them is 3.5 sacks for Michigan's defense. I do expect Maryland to pass a lot. I think I'm going to take the under, though. I'm going to look it up in a moment. I don't feel like Michigan's gotten 4 or more sacks in a game very much. I feel like UNLV, they did. I can't remember a ton of other ones. Steve, how about you? 3.5 sacks for Michigan's defense.
Under. I just read Maryland is averaging giving up 2 a game. You said Michigan, yeah, has not hit 4 except for maybe one game. So just going with the math on that one. But yeah, I mean, the silver lining though is, yeah, Maryland's definitely gonna have to try to pass the ball to have a chance in this game. So Michigan will have opportunities. Do they devote more than 4, you know, on a consistent basis, maybe to try to force a couple turnovers? You know, maybe in that case they'll get there, but yeah, I'm just going with the odds, just going to go with the under.
So they have hit at least 4 sacks 3 times. They had 5 against UNLV. They had 4 against Nebraska, 4 against Indiana. But in their other 7 games, Michigan has 10 total sacks. And they had 1 against Penn State, 1 against Purdue. So that's what you've seen in the last 3 weeks. All right, let's knock out a couple of these other over-unders. One that I think you and I are both in agreement on, 299.5 yards allowed. So that's total rushing and passing. Feels like that's a fairly easy under. I mean, Penn State didn't get there. To my knowledge, Purdue didn't get there. Yeah, another one. I feel like he did this with the Purdue game, too, where we thought he might have meant 199.5. Maybe he's Maybe he's messing with us, seeing if we'll overthink it. I'm going to take the under 299.5 total yards. Your thoughts?
It's hard to see them getting there, right? Even with Tagovailoa being as talented as he is, not on paper. So
they have one game they surrendered more than 300 yards. It was Nebraska, and they surrendered 305 yards. But remember, 75 of those came on a play with 4 minutes to go as Nebraska tried to salvage a shutout. So no one else got 100. I feel like they'll be in the 200s. I mean, Maryland's offense is good, but
true. Where would they rank offensively? They might be the best offense Michigan's faced so far, right? I mean,
yeah. I mean,
up there. I mean, they got to be one of the top Penn two State, or three.
I feel like Penn State's probably even.
Sure.
I mean, I don't think we should overlook, right? Because Penn State's offense looked terrible against Michigan, but like they did score 51 points on Maryland the week prior.
True.
So I think there is some element of like.
They were ascending. Penn State's offense appeared to be clicking heading into that game last week, right? That'd be the way I'd put it. So either way. Yes,
looking at the rest of the schedule, not a lot of good offenses this season. Not even a lot of decent offenses this season.
Under, easy one.
All right, last one. Let's do the third quarter one just so we can talk about it. Michigan, they didn't score a ton of points in the third quarter against Penn State, but they continued their season-long shutout streak in the third quarter. They're now outscoring opponents 117-0 in the third quarter. You know, we've talked to the players about it, and I think one thing that they point out is, one, a lot of these games, there is a focus on trying to get the players to not play in the fourth quarter. So like it's kind of like a get-out set. Right. If you shut them down in the third quarter and take over the game, then you don't have to play the fourth quarter. But I also think there is, you know, Michigan takes a lot of pride. I'm sure people who don't like Michigan will have something to say about this, but they take a lot of pride in their in-game halftime adjustments, you know, what they're able to do during halftime schematically. And then also, I think there is a third quarter mentality. I think there is no matter what happened in the first half, Michigan starts fresh in the third quarter and really tries to assert its will in this game. So it's kind of a risky one, but I'm going to take the under on 0.5 points allowed in the third quarter. It's about as low of an over under as you'll ever see for points in a quarter. At the same time, I think I'm sold on it. I think at this point, it's a little bit of a point of pride for Michigan. I don't think it'll last the whole season. I do think against Maryland, you know, because at that point you have to think Michigan will be taking over the trench battle, right? You know, that's kind of when, and if the game goes how we expect, that's kind of when Maryland will start being more pass 80% of the time versus 60. And so Michigan's defense will be able to adjust and prep for it. I'm going to take the under. How about you?
I'm going to take the over just to try to gain a point on you. Yeah. I can see this. I can see it, you know, easily being another donut bagel or whatever on the board, but no, I'm just solely to try to gain a point on you. I'm going to take the over. So sorry.
No worries. I probably would have done the exact same thing. Your final thoughts on this matchup and your score prediction for Saturday.
Not a lot of like deep final thoughts here yet for Michigan. Stay healthy. I run a conservative game plan out there. And yeah, I think the biggest storyline for me in this one is that the defense is going to get a good test ahead of Ohio State as far as the strengths go. So, you know, so I think for Michigan, it's a good way to sort of finish up before the big one. So I'm going to say Michigan 37, Maryland 14. Michigan covers.
Okay. I promise I am not just piggybacking off of yours. My score prediction is 38-14. I wrote it down, so I'm sticking to it. But yeah, ultimately, I think this is a game Michigan wins comfortably, but maybe doesn't pour on in the second half. You know, maybe they just kind of continue to play. You know, it's tricky because I think Maryland, especially on the road, definitely like a good enough team that they could catch a Michigan team sleepwalking. I don't think Michigan's sleepwalking. I think the best case scenario for Michigan is that they're what we outlined at the beginning of the season as their most on paper trap game, probably at Maryland, wedged between two top 10 matchups, you know, late November, all that. But it just so happens that Michigan is going for win number 1,000 in its history. And Michigan has opted to make that a big deal. You know, Jim Harbaugh, he's quite a Michigan historian, actually. If you start to listen to his press conference, I mean, he loves citing the stats and references. And I will say, in his defense, every former Michigan player, especially from past decades that I've talked to, this is a big deal for them. You know, because they were everyone who's played for Michigan has been a part of some amount of victories. Maybe for some it's only one or two, but for some it's 30, 40, 50. I mean, maybe they were there for win number 900 or win number 800 or whatever. I mean, this is something Michigan gets bragging rights on, and they're going to have bragging rights on it for at least a season or two, just based on the overall standings. To Jim Harbaugh's knowledge, they looked up high school. They looked up NFL. It sounds like this is the first football team, period, to win 1,000 games. And so, yeah, Michigan's they're making a big deal out of it. Sounds like they're going to have patches. Sounds like they'll have, obviously, the helmet stickers. Sounds like they're going to try to commemorate this and make this as memorable as possible. So, you know, I know Alejandro joked in the podcast after the Penn State game that they should throw this game so that they win it at home against Ohio State. But I also think Michigan, you know, I think that just puts a little bit of energy into it. Like, they can't be – you don't want to sit on 999 with a loss at Maryland. So, you know, there's probably some trap game potential, but I think that opportunity, the opportunity to fly back home and with the 1,000th win in program history, I think that's compelling to the players. Some might roll their eyes, but the former players I've talked to, it doesn't sound like it's nothing to them. It sounds like it's a lot to them. And those players are hearing from the former players. You know, Michigan's current players hear about that. They, you know, I think motivation will be high to get that 1,000th win and then go for Big Ten, another perfect season, another Big Ten title. Yeah, I think Michigan is very much in playoff mode. I think Sherrone Moore had a nice quote. I can't remember if it was right after the game or on Wednesday, but he said it was a tournament game for us against Penn State. And this game, technically not, but also you're seeing the college football playoff standings. Right now, you don't really want to lose a game. You know, beating Ohio State would probably, and winning the Big Ten would probably get Michigan in the college football playoff. But at the same time, margin for error seems a little bit less this year than in past years. So this is an opportunity for Michigan to score another road win, score win number 1,000, and head into the game undefeated for the second year in a row. Be sure to read lots of content leading up to this game, including some stuff about Sign Gate. We've already got the statements up. We'll have some insider intel and as well as some free stories over at the michiganinsider.com, michigan247sports.com. We'll have our typical preview content as well for the football game. Alejandro and I will be down in DC providing live coverage, so be sure to check all of that out. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. We'll see you next time.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.